Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
First things first, I'm Jen Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter getting his sleeves all set. That is Nick Wright, whose sleeves are already set. Good guys?
Yes.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
We got a fun show today. The Lakers got blown out by the Nuggets. Wasn't fun for them. Ben is calling out Antonio Brown. Not fun for AB. But we start this Wednesday morning with Thursday Night Football. We're calling a preview of what should be a pretty good game if both teams play the way they've been playing. Saints and Cowboys. Saints have won 10 straight. Boys have won 3 straight. Jerry Jones just wants to get something straight. Don't underestimate the importance of this game.
Each play, every time they have the ball, each play, we've got to think it's the Super Bowl play. It is the play. And we just don't have to play them that way, both on our defensive front and as well as when we play offensively. Big games like this are down to the individual play. And if every player will, on every play in this game, say, when we put that on tape Monday, it's going to look like one of my best plays of the year. That's what it's really going to take, that kind of focus to beat a team like this.
All right, so let's talk about the Cowboys' realistic chances of pulling off the upset, CC, and beating a team that is playing arguably as well as any team in the NFL right now in the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, we typically go through this. The team that's the hottest team, every week someone's gunning for them, so it becomes more and more difficult. Dallas is a quality team. They got good players, and I believe that they can match up with the New Orleans Saints, but there's a few things that have to happen. We know when Dallas plays their best, we know what that formula is. We know that their defense, at times, has been elite. They have to be elite in this game. They have to, as Nick would say, kind of recalibrate the game where they're able to get extra possessions, be more aggressive. Mm-hmm. Say, once they cross the 50, they're always going to be in four down territory. We know in the NFL, it's almost impossible to win if you don't win the turnover margin. But I just believe the style for which they do it is through Ezekiel Elliott. Swallow your pride. Don't try to go through your quarterback. You need to go through your tailback. And I believe that is the table for the play action pass, because in those two areas, they have to be very, very special. And their defense, I know they've talked a lot this week. They're going to have to play an elite level, because Drew Brees, to me, is playing the best quarterbacking that I think that he's ever played in this great career that he's had.
What do we think the most points the Cowboys can score is? The most points, realistically, barring multiple special teams, defensive touchdowns, barring an aberrant performance.
I don't know if they can get in the 30s.
Right. And so there's the rub here. The New Orleans Saints all year long have been held under 30 twice. They played 11 games, held under 30 twice. They've had more games where they've scored 45-plus than the games they've scored fewer than 28. Like, I mean, it's not supposed to be able to happen. The last on this run, 30, 45, 51, 48, 31. The last team to hold them under 30 was Baltimore. Now, Baltimore at least played that game respectably. That was New Orleans coming off a bye. It was New Orleans before New Orleans had this explosion that I think really started with those great wins against the Vikings and Rams. Mm-hmm. Two games that we thought they potentially could lose, they found ways to win. But so I agree that Dallas has to have a time of possession game. Zeke has to be excellent. But there is, you cannot beat this team 21-17. That game does not exist. And so while I agree with that has to be the strategy, what you laid out,
mm-hmm.
they also do have to make some explosive plays. This isn't last week when the Cowboys were going into their game and they were talking about, and Amari did make great plays, and I was proven wrong in that regard, but I didn't think that's what they needed to do. They were going up against a Washington team on a short week that was starting Colt McCoy, and I said, man, don't worry about Amari Cooper. Just run Zeke. Now, yeah. Amari made the plays that broke the game open. Against New Orleans, they need all of their offensive weapons to have game of the year type things. That's what Jerry's talking about. As silly as it is, every play is a Super Bowl play. That's ridiculous. But they need all of their guys to be in the running for the best game of the year they've had offensively, because this Saints team, they scored 31 last week with Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara combining for less than 70 receiving yards, zero
touchdowns.
With guys
we never heard of.
Right, mm-hmm. Dan Connor and Dan Arnold, whoever he was. There is no way to slow down the Saints offense, really. You can just temper how much they beat you, and so can you score with them?
Here's the problem. What's the one way that the Cowboys are going to be successful? Running Zeke, right? Mm-hmm. That's how they're successful.
Yes.
The Saints have the number one rush defense. Tell me how you get through that, because this is what the Cowboys do. They're going to want to change the game plan and say, all right, now Amari Cooper played well last mm-hmm. Thursday. Let's get him back into it. Let's have a couple more design big plays for him. And that's what we talked about. That's where they get into trouble, right? When they start changing what the game plan
is. Yeah, the one thing the Saints have not done, they're number one in rush defense, and they have not done that with putting extra people into the box. So they don't play eight-man front. They try not to play a seven-man front. So they have done that with nickel, dime, because they're ahead, and they've been very, very good on first and second down. So teams have not been able to be methodical, because you lose your patience. Because regardless of what people say, I'm going to concentrate. Drew Brees is on the other side, and their offense is going to score. When they get in the red zone, they're going to score a touchdown. So the thing with Dallas is we have to force New Orleans to play a game defensively that they don't want to play. They can be number one in the NFL, but they're going to have to do it with an eight-man box. So it's not a matter of how many yards I get running the ball. It's a matter of how many attempts. I need to force the defensive coordinator of New Orleans to say, I need to put that extra guy down the box, because then that part is going to help out Dak in the passing game. But I am forcing them Zeke. I am giving him the ball at least 28 times. And if I throw him the ball out of the backfield, if he touches the ball 30 times, I believe that's the best recipe for the Cowboys, Nick.
New Orleans' offensive numbers are so skewed that they are skewing their defensive numbers. New Orleans first in the league in points, first in the league in points per drive, and first in the league in fewest turnovers. They have been so good offensively that it tricks people into what their defense actually is. Because you look at their defense, you're like, oh, best rush defense in the league, third worst pass defense in the league.
Mm-hmm.
That's by the traditional just yardage stats. If you want to really get into the weeds, the Football Outsiders have a DVOA stat that really takes time, score situation, accounts for it. That gives you a better idea of who this team really is. Their pass defense is better than 30th. They're giving up a bunch of yards because teams are trailing. They're doing nothing but passing. And the Saints are in games where a lot of times they're playing soft coverage throughout the fourth quarter because they're just trying to get to the finish line with nobody getting hurt and with the game ending as quickly as possible. The rush defense looks as good as it is because so many teams this year have had to abandon the run in the second half. So I do think their rush defense is better than their pass defense, but it is, I don't actually think the Saints have the best run defense in football. They do statistically, but I think this is how good of a year Drew Brees is having. Drew Brees has been one of their best run defenders. That offense has been so good, teams have been.
I feel better if Dallas was playing the Rams. Because regardless of what the stats say, you can run against the Rams.
Right.
The Saints, you have not been able to run against them, regardless of what you see on the other side. That's why it requires a great deal of patience.
When you look at games like this, we often throw in words like trap game, right? Because this is the kind of game that would be very easy for the Saints to look past. This is a Cowboys team that just recently caught fire. There's a lot of things they do well, but there are a lot of things they don't do well, and we can sort of game plan around that. As a former player, how do you have to trick yourself into not looking past a certain game, and does that fall on Sean Payton?
I actually thought the trap game was going to be Thanksgiving, playing late at night, tough after early. It's really hard to play that Thanksgiving game, even though they were playing at home. I thought that was the game that potentially that they could be a little bit lax. But you can see now they had like a mini bye. A lot of the guys got away. They got a lot of Ohio State guys. Those guys went away to watch Ohio State play. So they get their mind fresh and charged up again. You can believe Sean Payton has spent a lot of his offseason. He used to have a home in Dallas, spends a lot of time in Dallas. They are not going to be sleepwalking against the Dallas Cowboys on Thursday Night Football. Sean Payton and Drew Brees, they will be ready. This is no trap game for the Saints. That part, I would be shocked. If I get on TV and the Saints were not prepared and not ready, and I believe Dennis Allen is going to come after him. He's going to come after Dak. I believe he's going to blitz him and take him out of their run game and force them to be able to throw the ball. So I think they're going to have an aggressive attitude in how they approach this game.
See, how many nationally televised night games were you not amped for?
None.
That's the if it were a 1 p.m. kickoff with 12 other games going on after when you're 10-1, then I would buy into it more. You are playing a team that is the league's most popular, even if it's far from the league's best in Dallas. You are in a situation where you're having to go on the road and the whole world's watching. And by the way, they don't have any cushion. They and the Rams, and they know what they have after this is they go to Tampa. Why does that matter? Tampa's the only team to beat them.
Mm-hmm.
They have two against Carolina and one against Pittsburgh. Like,
this is big.
The Saints probably have to go a minimum of 14-2 to get the number one overall seed. They might have to go 15-1 to get it. So I think their attention to detail and their focus is going to be at a fever pitch the rest of the
time. I'm with Nick as far as that focus. I believe after this game, we could be talking about, man, Drew Brees, him and Sean Payton have this team focused like they're trying to get to another Super Bowl. What Jerry Jones was talking about, I believe the Saints, I believe this is a special type of year for them. They got a special group of guys. And Drew Brees, now listen, we haven't seen a quarterback play at this level. Right. It's a treat to be able to watch him, and he's going to put on the show on Thursday night.
All right, we'll talk much more about this. We'll talk about Amari Cooper. We'll get Eric Mangini out here to discuss everything. But coming up, we'll switch gears, talk some basketball on the other side. Are the Lakers considering a huge trade? That's next on First Things First. All right, the big headline in the NBA last night went something like this. Lakers lose big, Lakers look bad. LeBron didn't have his best night, scoring only 14 points on 15 shots. Lonzo didn't have his best night, left the game with a sprained ankle, said he will be back on Thursday, though. And boy, the Lakers didn't have their best night, losing 115-87 to the third-place Nuggets. All right, Nick, what went wrong for the Lakers last night?
All right, well, so LeBron had his worst game of the year, and you could argue one of the worst games he's had in a decade. Post-rookie year, there's only been 15 games. LeBron had this few combined points, rebounds, and assists in a game. 10 minutes into the game, the Lakers are up one. LeBron's got 10 points. He's 4 of 7 from the field. The rest of the way, he had 4 points and was 1 of 8 from the field. So, like, that's a recipe to getting blown out. They got it close late in the second quarter. Lonzo turned his ankle. I mean, it was a bad game all around. The real teams go to Denver and lose. That's one of the best home court advantages in the NBA. The real problem for the Lakers, aside from LeBron having an awful night, to me, was not last night's loss. It was this weekend's loss. If they had not lost to the Magic, they had been coming in here on a winning streak. You lose to Denver on the road, no problem. It's compounded because they had a game they should not have lost at home against Orlando. Then this game all of a sudden takes on greater importance.
But they also played terribly last night.
Well, correct. They played, but we wouldn't be reacting to it as negatively as we will today if they hadn't previously lost to Orlando. But it's very simple. That Rondo's out, Lonzo went out, and LeBron had a horrible game. Not just by his standards, but, I mean, 5 of 15 from the field, 14 points with 2 assists. Like, that's not a LeBron James game. That's not even a fringe all-star bad game. So all of that led to getting blown out yesterday.
Yeah, I don't want to overreact, but it is that point in the season where you've played 20 games, right? They're 11-9. What I get concerned about is the lack of energy, especially with young players. You would think they're young. I mean, they should be up and ready to go and play at a pace, because that's what they said. They want to play up and down. They want to play at a pace. LeBron's really hadn't played that since earlier in his career. They haven't been playing to that pace lately. They started off earlier in the year, so now who are they? What's their identity? We talk about it all the time in sports. It's about creating an identity and forcing that identity on people in the game, on the court. And that's what the Lakers, what I didn't see. I don't see them game in and game out knowing exactly what they want to do, what they want to accomplish. And I see this difference in energy game in that I don't know which Laker team. And you would expect with all those young players they have, you would expect that to be a little more consistent. Now, Tyson Chandler, I expect him to be a little up and down. LeBron, even at this age, I can give him a night off or two. But these younger players, no. That right there, to me, is a problem.
It also seemed like they were all sort of missing at the same time. They missed 33 three-pointers, yeah. Which means they were all having a bad shooting. How rare is that?
Five of 35 from three, you're going to get beat. You don't have any point guard starting the second half. You're going to get beat. The best player in the world has the worst, one of the five worst games he's had in 5 years. You're going to get beat, but sees bigger picture stuff about even if you get beat the way you get beat, how ready are you to play? This was not that dissimilar to a bad loss they had the night before LeBron scored 51 in Orlando a week ago, where they just didn't come out ready to go. Like, you can't have a young team that's trying to prove itself that comes out flat this all.
I mean, I've been willing to be patient with LeBron going to the Lakers. But last year, this Lakers team, young, potential, like a few years away, they were 8-12 at this point. So how much better are they now with LeBron at 11-9? So for me, right now, it's time for them to start showing the improvement that they were showing. Now we saw them go back, got swept in the season series by Orlando. Really? So when I look at the teams in the West, like right now, who could the Lakers beat in the series? And so that, to me, is a big, big problem moving forward.
I want to ask you guys about the reported deal that might be out there, the trade that might be out there, Brandon Ingram for Bradley Beal. Where do you stand there?
Listen, I think Bradley Beal is a poor man's Klay Thompson, which is not a bad thing at all. That's a compliment. I think Bradley Beal is a perfect fit for LeBron. I think Bradley Beal would instantly make this team better, and I would absolutely unequivocally not make this move. Oh. This summer, they had the option of moving Brandon Ingram as the biggest piece in a trade and getting back Kawhi Leonard. And they said, no, we're going to wait.
But you also would have had to include some other pieces.
You would have had to include at least Kuzma. The report was they didn't want Lonzo in San Antonio. So it would have been, I think it was Ingram, Kuzma, maybe Josh Hart, maybe not, and a draft pick. But the piece that the Lakers would not move off of was Ingram. And so I understand it's not a one-for-one, and I don't know if this would be an exact one-for-one. It almost surely wouldn't be. Probably move KCP as well or something. That doesn't matter. But you cannot stray from the plan 20 games in. If you add Bradley Beal, you're out of the game for a max free agent.
Because it's a panic
move? And that's the reason. It's not the player. It's not the skill. It's because it really gets you off track of what you planned on doing. So it's not a matter of, man, does Bradley Beal fit in with LeBron and all that? No, it's not. Because you're not going to be able to get a max player. And you're not going anywhere with LeBron and Bradley Beal. You're just like LeBron and Kevin Love. I would debate, man, Bradley Beal probably is a better fit than Kevin Love with LeBron. Like, people would be able to debate. You're not going anywhere in this NBA with those two.
So why would they even contemplate a deal
like
this?
Well, I think this is – I think it's something that you discuss. I think that they do talk about the fit. They also talk about the fact that Brandon Ingram has – we're still waiting on the leap. We're still waiting on the night where Ingram goes for 35. And we're like, oh, okay, at least he has that in him.
Yeah.
I'll bring this up until it's not true. Since high school – Brandon Ingram scored more than 26 points one time. Like, until he has that explosion, people are going to say, oh, did we overvalue him? And maybe if the Lakers had to do it all over again, they would have considered moving him to get Kawhi Leonard in the building. Especially with Kawhi wants to be in L.A. The Clippers all of a sudden,
where are they?
I mean, the Clippers are a real team now. They do have the best record in the Western Conference.
You can argue for Doc Rivers as coach of the year.
So far, and so
and
like
it would have put them a year ahead of their plan.
All of those things are correct, exactly. And so, but I just can't. I can't 20 games in deviate. I can't 20 games in panic. Not when I did all these moves, got the Luol Deng buyout to get the max slot open. I can't then 20 games in say I want to be 13-7 and said we're 11-9. Now we're changing what the plan is.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, who is Big Ben throwing under the bus this time? That's next on First Things First. Friday on Fox, the Pac-12 champion will be crowned as number 17 Utah battles number 11 Washington. And then on Saturday, number 6 Ohio State, number 21 Northwestern. Put it in your phone, see? They go toe-to-toe for the Big Ten title. Coverage begins at 7 Eastern Friday and Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Send an alert to myself.
See, I were workshopping his pregame speech this morning.
Yep.
Talking to the team.
Yep. It's about respect.
Oh. Time for us to go viral. Check this one out from a show favorite, Jonathan Clark. This guy's a science teacher. See, have you spoken to Adam Silver about letting this guy in the dunk contest?
He's a science teacher. Getting on the Lakers court. Oh, my.
Nice.
Jay Clark, the jumper.
Okay. I love science.
Wait, what am I missing? It went from, oh, he, go, he moved it from one hand.
He threw it off the backboard.
Oh.
That's impressive. Yes. And that, what's, here's the thing. I've never seen that dunk before.
That would make me far more
excited.
No, I'm not going to say it. Okay. He could teach me science.
Oh, okay.
I would sign up for his
far more apps.
Yes,
far more engaged.
Absolutely.
Science.
Yes.
Science.
Yeah, I was
going to
say
we'll get to the Bunsen burners in a moment, but first,
right.
Watch this dope 360.
Yes.
And now let me tell you about the periodic table.
Yeah, I like science more than outer space, too.
Stories to start your morning brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Sixers are still figuring out what to do with struggling Markelle Fultz. Yesterday, Jimmy Butler defended him, saying, quote, "I just want Markelle to know that he's got everybody in his corner here. We want him to be great." Nick, any chance Fultz turns it around in Philly?
I don't want to say there's no chance, but I think his best chance is somewhere else. And I think his best chance is going somewhere to play basketball where no one can see him. And I mean, like a can you take a leave of absence from the NBA and just play on your own without the cameras, without the fans? Because I do not think it is physical. I think it is mental. This is as perplexing of a sports story as has happened in my lifetime covering sports. I've never quite seen something like this. About once every 3 months, I watch his highlights, his last year at Washington.
Mm-hmm.
The guy was a great shooter. I don't know what's happened. I can't figure it.
It's definitely all mental. I was at the game against Utah, the first game that he did the in shooting the free throw. I suggest that he shoot the free throws underhand. That'll take the hitch out of it. Rick Barry, trust me, mm-hmm. Swallow your pride. If you wanted to take the hitch out of it, that's the way to do it. But I believe that they should just send him down, man. Send him down to the G League. You cannot send an NBA player anywhere to regain their confidence where no one's going to be watching them. That's impossible. But you do have a developmental league that is perfect for a guy like him.
All right, on to the NFL now. Le'Veon Bell found his way back into the news where apparently he feels most comfortable. Bell commented on an Instagram post about him joining Andrew Luck on the Colts. He said, quote, "Just imagine." See, would L. Bell be a good fit with the Colts next season?
Yeah, he'd be a good fit in a lot of places. He'd be a good fit here in New York City. I'm moving out of my apartment, bro. You can stay downtown. Moving to the suburbs and everything. City a little rough for me. But Indianapolis is also one of those other destinations. Great place, low-key, got a quarterback, also has a head coach, got a great offensive mind. And Frank Wright, Jen and I, we both believe he's underrated as far as the coaches. And Andrew Luck's healthy.
Hell
absolutely,
and
man.
Well.
They got cash.
And the Colts, not that this necessarily matters that much, they have a history of running backs with his skill set thriving there. Marshall Faulk early, Edgerrin James after. I think it is a fit. They have the cap space. They're a good team. Mm-hmm. Like, for all those reasons, I know a lot of people have been saying the Jets. I've been saying the Colts. I also would keep an eye on the Texans, another AFC South team.
Moving on to the Jaguars now. After benching the quarterback and firing the offensive coordinator, many questioning why Jacksonville stuck with Blake Bortles as long as they did. Tom Coughlin went on the radio to say he'll, quote, "put the gloves on to defend the Jags' offseason moves." What'd you think of the comments, Nick?
Well, it was very interesting. An 11-minute radio interview. Never said the word Blake. Never said the word Bortles. He did say the quarterback, our team, our decision. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to put the gloves on to defend the move because there is no defending it. Like, listen, this is they made a bet. They made a bet. A lot of people were saying it's the wrong bet. Don't make it. They said, we know better than you, and they are being proven wrong. And they can't get out of that contract this offseason.
Yeah, he only did that interview. He hadn't been doing interviews, but he did it for some charity. I'm willing to box him for charity. Since he want to put the gloves on, better make it amateur because he can get him a headgear on. Because I'm going to bang him around his midsection, and then I'm going to work up to his head because in his head, he made the decision on that quarterback. He could have had Cap as his quarterback. So, Tom Coughlin, let's do it for charity. You put the gloves on. Put a headgear on. No, because I'm going to bang you.
All
right. Casey missed it the first time. Back to the Cowboys now. We finally saw the Amari Cooper trade pay off for Dallas last week, where he scored twice and had 180 yards. Jerry Jones had high praise for the fourth-year wideout, saying, "Cooper is as good a route runner as has ever put on a Cowboys uniform." Hyperbole, that's Jerry Jones' middle name. Also Wayne. Wayne is also his middle name.
I didn't know.
See, what are your thoughts on Jerry Jones' comments?
All right, now.
It's this time of the week. What day is it? It's Wednesday?
It is Wednesday.
Jerry Jones.
Jerry Jones said something.
Boy, you know I love my football. But Jerry's right about this one.
Oh.
When I coached Amari in high school, before he went to University of Alabama, he was one of the most mature route runners that I had ever seen in high school. him and Larry Fitzgerald, right up there. Guys who don't lose their patience, guys who understood bump and run, understood releases, understood leverage at a high level before that. Then he went on to Alabama. His wide receiver coach was the offensive coordinator, Mike Groh of Philadelphia. So he was taught football at a high level at Alabama. He thrived. All-American, broke Julio Jones, all of his records. Then he went to Oakland. In the first 2 years, you could see the coaching, the patience, it paid off. And then Amari lost his confidence. Amari is like a streak shooter. He's like Clay. He don't need a whole bunch of maintenance, but he does need to know that he's appreciated. He does need a hand around him to love him. He's not a rugged, rough, tough guy. He's not a type A personality, come into a room and light it up. But he is a guy that if you show him confidence, now in Oakland, he lost his confidence. And when he lost his confidence in his hands, his route running, he started trying to be too creative. So he got off of some of his fundamentals and started doing some other things. You could start to see in Dallas and trying to find his way. He's getting back to his fundamentals. He has unusual quickness in and out of his breaks. He has creativity. He's like a painter. I teach young receivers that I want you to paint this painting in your head before you run it on the field. And Amari can do it. He can visualize it, and then he can run an out off an outside release. He can run out off an inside release. So for me, Jerry Jones, he knows what he's talking about. And you're talking about the great history of the Dallas Cowboys. We know how much they've struggled since Michael Irvin is getting someone to try to replace him. Amari Cooper is a special, special route runner. And Jerry Jones, it's not hyperbola this time. He is right about it. Jerry does know something about football, but he's right about Amari Cooper.
All right, so listen, we're going to get nerdy here for a second. The audience, stick with us. I got some hot takes for Big Ben coming up in like 3 minutes. But first, I want to ask you this, C.
Yep.
Explain what makes someone a great route runner. Break it down.
The ability to be able to get off a bump and run and also to be able to avoid guys in space. Continuity. Can they get off up the field, pressure the defense, and get in and out of the cuts and be able to catch the ball in traffic? Typically, those are the things. How good are they with their hands? Do people hit them off the line of scrimmage? Are they clumsy? Do they have game speed? All those things, you can check the boxes on Amari. He just lost his confidence. It's just like anything else. And when you're trying to do it at a high level, when you lose your confidence, you lose the ability to do some of the most fundamental things.
So you're saying he didn't lose his confidence in his route running. He lost his confidence in an overall game because of the drops. And that then had the trickle-down effect.
That he started trying to do other things to overcompensate, and it led to him getting into bad habits.
Okay, so the things that he had been doing that came most natural to him, he was straying from. The things that made him who he was, he was straying from because all of a sudden he couldn't do the most important part of his job, catch the football.
How sustainable is Amari Cooper's play if he's always going to be playing with a guy like Dak Prescott, who we've all agreed is sort of that's in that subpar category right now, won't get the deep throws, isn't always as accurate?
No, Amari Cooper is the start of it. Him, Zeke in the backfield, they need a tight end. They need Michael Gallup, the wide receiver. He's going to keep emerging. I believe they just keep adding talent. Cole Beasley's done a decent job there in the slot. So when you have a number one, now you can make an evaluation. Now start putting guys in their spots. We talk about it, Nick. Wide receivers are like a starting five. You know, you need a small guy, a point guard, shooting guard, power forward, big guy. Amari Cooper is a scoring guard, all right? He could score the basketball. Now let's add some other things, and I believe the next piece is that tight end.
And he also knows in Dallas, at least thus far, small sample size, he's going to be getting the football. In Oakland, he was targeted about one in every seven times he went out for a route. In Dallas thus far, it's been one in every four. So that's the other thing, like a shooter. It's easier to be a good shooter if you know you're going to get your shots.
Yes.
If you know you're going to get, even if I miss one, I'm going to get a bunch more. It's really hard if you're a guy that's getting 6 minutes a game, only going to get a few shots to really get on pace.
The one thing Jerry did good before he acquired Amari, he went back to Alabama. He talked to Nick Saban. And Nick Saban wrote him a prescription of how to attack Amari Cooper, how to bring him into the fold, and how to get the best of him. That's why Jerry's making a statement like this. He sounds exactly like Nick Saban. If you go back to Amari Cooper's days in Alabama, watch how Nick Saban goes out of his way in the press conference when he has big games to let people know who Amari Cooper is and the respect that he had for him. So Jerry's doing a good job when that making that trade for Amari and going back seeing, man, what makes this guy tick?
And don't forget, it's comments like what Jerry Jones said that also help Amari Cooper's confidence as well.
Of course.
That when he hears it. Yeah. All right. It is Wednesday, which means Ben Roethlisberger said something slightly questionable, which we will now analyze. Big Ben had huge numbers on Sunday, throwing for over 450 yards, but he also had a costly end zone interception helping the Broncos win. However, don't tell Ben Roethlisberger the pick was on him.
I wanted to even go back to the same play. I was going to throw it to Juju again. I think we should have went to him four straight plays. But third down was another run pass option. He did undercut AB. So, you know, who knows what would have happened. And that's where I talked to AB. AB, you have to come flat. You can't drift in the end zone because those undercuts can happen. So would the guy have had a chance to intercept it? Yes, I definitely think he would have had a chance. I can't control that guy. Sometimes those things happen. I'm a quarterback that's going to go out and sling it. You talk about gunslinger, whatever you want to talk about. I'm not going to worry about interceptions. I hate doing them. They bother me. But I'm going to go out and play my game and try and help us win football games. So, you talk about guys that miss a basketball, right? You miss threes or you're not making. Do they stop shooting? No, they keep shooting because you trust yourself.
All right, he said a lot there. There's a lot to take in. Nick, where do you want to start? What do you want to break down?
All right, so I'll let C break down the did he have flat his route out the right way, that part of it. But the other things he said are just vintage Big Ben, totally absurd and totally unnecessary. First thing, I wanted to go back to the same play. Take that, Randy Fickner. You called the wrong play. Take that also, James Conner, because after they went to Juju on the first play, they went to James Conner running him on second and goal from the three on the second play. James Conner, who just a few weeks ago, Big Ben was like, man, I'm going to fight for him to be the starter. I'm going to fight for him to get carries. This is my guy. Okay, so throw that out the window. When he says, I'm not going to worry. I'm going to go out there and throw. I'm not going to worry about the interceptions like a shooter. No, it's not like a shooter. A good three-point shooter misses 3 out of 5. Like, the best quarterbacks in football this year are throwing one pick for every 60 attempts. Like, what are you talking about? And also, like, here's the reality. In the red zone this year, Big Ben's quarterback rating is 71. The only guys worse than him are Blake Bortles, who just lost his job, and apologies, Case Keenum.
Shocking.
He's the 30th ranked quarterback in the red zone this year. How important are those red zone numbers? Well, let's see. Who's the number one passer rating in the red zone? Oh, that's right. It's Drew Brees. Number two is Patrick Mahomes.
Yes.
What do they have in common? Oh, their teams are a combined 19-3, and they're the top two MVP candidates. Like, what he's saying is ridiculous, and it's unnecessary, and it simultaneously throws the play caller and AB under the bus. And what is the thing he's saying about the route? Is he even accurate that AB ran a bad route?
There's always at least some truth in it. They did have a run pass option on in this play, and when you're at the goal line, when you do have a zero route or a slant, you do have to try to stay flat. But you also, when you're at the 3 to 5 yard line, you have to be able to try to create some type of angle. AB's problem is he's outside the numbers. That's the mandate on that route. But Darian Stewart's 2 yards deep in the end zone. Now, he does come up a little bit, but in the pursuit of my angle to get to where I need to be, because in perfect, when he makes that play fake, I want to replace that safety, Darian Stewart. So watch the play fake. I want to be right on the other side of him when he pops. The DB is going to come underneath, but if you throw the ball high, which you're supposed to do at the back of the end zone, he's not going to be able to get there. And the reason why I would be upset about this is because the public shouldn't know about this. Because if this happens to me in the game, the quarterback knows he's going to take the blame. If they come and ask me, I'm going to take the blame. So whoever, the coach is going to take the blame. Like, that's the way you do in team sports. You don't start giving away trade secrets. You don't start giving away inside parts of the play to be able to be like, hey, AB should have been better on that. The ball didn't even get to him. Now, if Roby intercepts it,
yeah,
then we can talk about the corner. But the corner didn't intercept it.
Well, that's the other part of this that's so frustrating. Big Ben, after the game, just absolved himself of the pick. He said, D-tackle. He got pushed back into it. And now he's giving an interview as if Roby made the play. As if he didn't want AB to run such a flat route, he cuts in front of the defensive lineman. You know, no matter what route AB runs, that defensive lineman is still there. But this is just something other quarterbacks don't do. And guys across
not,
the league.
Not only quarterbacks, leaders in the NFL.
They always.
You don't see guys diagramming plays, telling them not only the coach called a bad play, whoever was running the route, who he didn't have really anything to do with what ended up happening because the ball got intercepted even before it got to him. You don't see guys giving away that type of information.
And Tom Brady, who does a similar radio show in Boston once a week, I'm sure they don't get paid much to do it, you never hear him divulging any kind of secrets, throwing anyone under the bus, giving insight to the
point. This is what you heard from Tom Brady last week. Totally in contrast to Ben Roethlisberger. This is what I know about the Patriots. When I don't turn the ball over, me... When I don't turn it over, because I got the ball in my hand, when I don't turn it over, we win. Now, my problem is I'm trying to play so conservative that I think I need to be a little more aggressive. That's leadership. He's talking to himself. He's challenging himself. And that's one of the reasons why Tom Brady is the GOAT.
And what would the reaction have been if any of the other people that Big Ben's talking about had said the same thing from their perspective? If Juju said, man, I thought we should have kept throwing it to me. If James Conner said, I got it on second down. I think I should have got it on first, second, and third. We'd have scored. If the offensive coordinator had said, we called a great play. Big Ben didn't make the right throw. If Antonio said, throw it high the way you're taught in high school. I make the play, we win the game. They're all crushed.
Right.
Like, and the other thing, there's an interesting article in The Athletic about Big Ben's weekly radio interview that came out this week, prior to this week's interview. And one of the things they point out, which is really interesting, Big Ben finishes this interview. It's from 11 to 11:20 Pittsburgh time every Tuesday. And Mike Tomlin's weekly press conference is at noon on Tuesday. Now, he does more press conference than that, but the one that's the full kind of autopsy of everything that happened. Mike Tomlin is put in a position every week where he has to answer for things Big Ben has said in the moments before he takes the podium, where Tomlin, most of the time I would imagine, has not been able to listen, has not been able to be prepped for it. Like, it's a totally unfair spot, but you're coaching. You're right. Eli goes on with Francesa. Brady goes on the EI.
Yeah.
But those guys never say anything interesting. They never say anything that is going to that is going to cause controversy for their teams.
Yeah, Larry Fitzgerald, I'm on text with him. Are you playing football? You need to let me know. I've been in your life a long time. He's like, I don't know yet. That's what leaders do.
You don't fracture your locker room.
Yeah,
all right, let's take a break. Coming up, could Andrew Luck be an MVP dark horse next on First Things First? Welcome back to the show. Coach Eric Mangini is here.
What up?
Good morning.
Good to
Coach,
see you.
How you doing?
Doing great.
It's great to have you. You're refreshing takes. We need it. Sure. What?
Hey, Coach, will you tell Jenna?
What?
Your mom watches for Jenna. Your sister watches
really?
For Jenna. They're huge Jenna fans.
I love that. Fans. Thank
they
you.
We're
well,
up to seven.
This is for you, Mangini.
They don't follow you on Twitter.
What's oh, you know what? So mean. My parents watch, so that's nine.
Marcy and Marnie. Whichever kid you make
club.
Do it. There's the seven. Go ahead.
So mean. Andrew Luck has put together one heck of a stretch of football, Nick. He's thrown at least three touchdown passes in eight straight games and is on pace for career highs in both touchdowns and completion percentage. He now quietly has the third best odds to win MVP. I say quietly because the two guys in front of him are putting together record-breaking seasons in Pat Mahomes and Drew Brees. All right, Coach, how surprising has Andrew Luck's resurgence been? The guy didn't throw a down all last season.
The surprising part to me isn't how he's playing. The question I had is what he'd be like coming off the injury because there were so many unknowns, and the whole process was just – it didn't follow any pattern that we were used to. He was coming back, then he was going to be out, and then he was going to come back again, and then he was out again. And you had to question whether or not the surgery had been – botched or if the issue was going to be
misdiagnosed,
something career ending and you were worried about that. But once he was back and we could see that he was getting he was fully recovered or as much as he could be, that part's not surprising. I've always thought that Andrew Luck had the potential to be a star and be a star for a long time. I think the fact that he's working in this offensive system, which is similar to a system that he had in offense. He was a West Coast-based offensive system in college, and then he's back into that. But my favorite thing, the best part of this season, is the amount of sacks. By far,
yes.
That to me is, it's been such a difference.
Change in philosophy.
And even the amount that he's gotten hit. And when you talk about Peyton Manning, you talk about Tom Brady, you talk about Drew Brees, you talk about any of those guys, what do they all do really well? They don't take unnecessary hits. They don't put themselves in that situation. And he's a guy who had to learn that.
And that wasn't something that he was doing and the team was doing a great job of early. When they were 1-5, he wasn't sacked at the level that he'd been sacked in the past, but he was still sacked 10 times in those first six games. In the five-game winning streak, he's been sacked one time. And the numbers are right there. Like, look at what he was the first six games of the year when they were 1-5. It's like, okay. He's slowly coming into form. And then the last five games, he's been spectacular. As good as any player in the league over the last five games. And this is where I am so happy for Andrew Luck. Because Luck's a guy that I got wrong. I saw there was all the hype surrounding him. His first couple years, I thought he was underwhelming. His third year was really good. And then his fourth year, he regressed, I thought, considerably. Now, I didn't know that he was fighting through an injury from basically year four on. And I said, we got to see the production. It's about availability. It's about production. Turns out he had a serious shoulder injury that he was dealing with. And now we are seeing Andrew Luck healthy with a competent offensive line, more than competent for the first time in his career. And he looks like the guy all the experts said he was going to be.
Right.
One of the best players in the league, and I'm happy for him.
And if we're going to talk about the Colts and what their resurgence in Andrew's career, I believe first we got to go back to they got it right as far as a general manager. Chris Ballard, they hired him. A lot of dysfunction in that organization. And you could see starting to stabilize. As you said, the most important thing outside of Andrew's health, man, how are we going to introduce him back into the league? And getting hit in your mouth is not the way to do it for your franchise quarterback. So for them getting bigger, I'm talking about bigger, bigger guys, more physical guys on the offensive line, changing the style. And they don't have a whole bunch of weapons. They got T.Y. and went out and got the tight end from
Ebron,
Detroit.
Who's having the best
resurrected
year of his career.
But it's not like Andrew Luck, like, oh, he needs this. Oh, he needs that. So for me, the general manager, they got it right in there. They changed the philosophy, how they're going to draft and pick players. And Frank Reich, even though he wasn't their first choice, all right? I think we believe, based on my NFL source told me, he was their third choice. But the general manager trusted him as a person moving forward football-wise. So that's why they went with Frank. So these two people, man, you talk about Andrew Luck's career and he'll get all the credit. Yes, he did a lot of hard work. But, man, he's got a stabilizing force. And this is what's going to change his career. If he ends up being a Hall of Famer, it will be back on these hires, Jim Irsay hiring that general manager and that head coach who changed the philosophy, who changed the arc of his career, coach.
And when you look at the draft this season, the yes. first draft pick's a guard, the second draft pick is a tackle. They're both playing. But I love the fact that Andrew Luck now is willing to throw the ball away. Andrew Luck is not going to take those unnecessary hits to get 4, 5, 6 yards. Now, there's still an element of that. He still has to get better at that.
But it's
huge.
But there is still also an element of his natural inclination to keep the play alive that serves them well. 3rd and 9, late in the game in the comeback against Miami, trying to get to the game-winning field goal. That is a play where you don't want to throw it away. You're in the final 2 minutes of a game. You're trying to win. It's a tie game. He avoids a sack, almost goes down, steps up in the pocket, finds T.Y. Hilton deep down the field on the far sideline. That was vintage best of Andrew Luck from the 2014 season. But to the GM, we've got to give him enormous credit for what his first major move was. We have the third pick of the draft. That guarantees us where you're going to have our choice of maybe Saquon, Denzel Ward, Bradley Chubb. Two of those three are definitely going to be there because we know a quarterback's going one.
And at that point, we don't know if Luck's going to be healthy. Right. He doesn't start throwing a weighted football till about 2.5 months after the draft.
So
you got to be thinking about a quarterback also.
All those things. And what they said was, no, we're going to trade back, get three additional second-round picks, and take a guard. Not even take a tackle in the top 10. Take a guard because we think he is the most surefire thing, and he is
definitely not the most sexy date if you're trying to go to the prom. No. I'm going with a big, sweaty guard. No.
He has been, and he's been awesome.
I go with the big, sweaty guard.
Of course, I think that's what you did.
And
he might be offensive rookie of the year as an offensive lineman. I mean,
yes.
He's at least in the discussion. Mm-hmm. They have additional draft capital now. You mentioned, and so all of that. And so Luck has been so good as of late to where now the Colts are a team that I think would be a very scary first-round playoff
matchup. They've won five in a row.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely.
My first year in New York, we took DeBrickshaw Ferguson and Nick Mangold, two offensive linemen in the first round. And it was you've seen the Jets at the draft, all the fans. It was deflating for them. But you're looking at guys that can stabilize a position for 10 or 12 years and give you continuity. And that's what I like that Chris Ballard did, is he went and he got two young guys that he felt could stabilize a position. He had the belief in Andrew Luck being able to come back. And then there's the fit with the coordinator, with the head coach, with the system. I think all those things and his maturity to not take those unnecessary hits. Huge, huge.
All right, Coach, stick around. Take a break. Coming up, can the Cowboys' defense actually stop the Saints' offense? There is a way. That's next on First Things First. Thursday Night Football returns tomorrow when Ezekiel Elliott, Dak Prescott, and the Cowboys take on Drew Brees, Michael Thomas, and the Saints. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network. And stream it on Prime Video. There's no way to not see this game.
And you can't. This is one of the best games of the year on Thursday Night Football. Saints trying to keep pace with the Rams. Cowboys trying to keep pace in the NFC East.
Both teams have had 7 days, too, after playing on Thanksgiving. Yep. Not that short week. Should be exciting.
I meant tech-wise, because we offer so many different ways
to see
the game. Back here with Coach Mangini, and we are going viral. Tua Tagovailoa has been outstanding for Alabama this season, tossing 36 touchdowns and just two picks. A reporter asked Tua about his weapons on offense. Take a listen.
I'm like a kid in a candy shop. You know, it's awesome. You know, I can go to the right, I can get a Snickers bar if I wanted to. You know, I go to the left, I get some Skittles. So, I mean, it's really fun, you know, for me as a quarterback to be behind some, you know, first round, perhaps, draft picks.
You know, go ahead. Sorry, no. Please.
I mean, you could insert Patrick Mahomes there. He could say the same thing.
Mm-hmm. You're more sold on Tua than Mahomes.
He's
sure.
More sold on Snickers.
I'm surprised you were sold on Andrew Luck, that you had seen enough from him. Cece, I know you're down under your playing weight for the first time since this millennia.
Yeah.
But if you were to break from your routine and go into a candy shop, you get one of those 1 pound bags. Right, but what would be your first choice? What's your number one overall draft pick?
Actually, I don't eat candy. But I'd probably get some goldfish. Goldfish, or I have to go back and get an old Chico stick.
Goldfish?
Goldfish, like the little red goldfish. Like,
oh, Swedish fish. Swedish fish.
He doesn't see fish in terms of nationalities.
No, I only like the red ones.
Yeah, that's what the red ones are, Swedish fish. Goldfish are orange crackers.
What about you, Coach?
I'm big league chew or any of that type of sugary bubble gum. I'm kind of into that.
Okay, but I like sweet tarts too.
Yeah, fireballs. Fireballs are pretty good.
Come on.
I get out of the sugar free section. I would do either a Twixie bar. Those are awesome. Twix bar, or a dark chocolate covered pretzel.
Oh, those are good.
That's it.
Someone bring Jenna some of those. Oh, no, I got some. I got some. I'm going to re-gift to her from 1932 that she brought to my house warming last year.
One time, I didn't look at the expiration date. It's not my fault. Anybody would have made that mistake.
I put it out on the curb, man. The rat said no. They wrote me a note, said no, thank you.
These Saints go marching on into Dallas Thursday night on Fox, preparing for the 6-5 Cowboys. Drew Brees in New Orleans trying to win their 11th straight. When asked how they were going to pull off the upset, Cowboys defensive end DeMarcus Lawrence gave a very graphic answer. Follow along. They're going to have to match our intensity, expletive, for 60 minutes straight. If you hit an expletive in the mouth and then they ain't doing what they're regularly doing, putting up 50 points, they start to get a little distressed. Now, you got them where you want them at, you know, and then you expletive choke their expletive out. This is exactly what I told Nick this morning when he asked me how the Cowboys could possibly beat the Saints. Does the Cowboys' defense match up with the Saints' offense in any way, Coach?
Well, I think the intensity argument is like an expletive cup of coffee. So it gives you a burst, and you can be up for a while. But after that goes away, and it'd be great if you could have this high intensity throughout the course of a whole game. But after that, it's game plan, it's scheme, it's matchups, it's consistency, it's turnovers, it's your ability to generate sacks and deal with the things that they're doing. And the matchups aren't great for Dallas right now. I tried to go through all the different stats. Is it third down? Is that going to be an edge for their defense? Right. They're one of the lower teams in the NFL defensively, and the Saints are in the top. So you look at sacks. They're better at sacks. They're about 12th in the league in sacks, but the Saints are number one in sacks. So turnovers, interceptions. Dallas not very productive in terms of turnovers, like in the 20s.
Yep.
Saints, number one or number two. So those things, I guess
you if
you don't match up there, then you'd start talking about intensity because
even
that's where you have to go.
Sometimes when you have a great offense, you would see, oh, here's their weak link. Here's the thing they don't do well that we do really well. We talk about that a lot when we have a game where it looks like one team is drastically favored over the other. It's like, but this team cannot protect their quarterback, and this defense is great at getting to the court, right? That's what you were looking
for.
Yeah,
you tend to start out the week with, okay, what do they do well?
Yes.
What do they do poorly, and who can we attack? And those are the three pillars that you put together as you're forming your plan, and or you look at as you're forming your plan.
And is the problem when you match up against the Saints, because I think Dallas has an excellent defense. We've talked about this defense being underrated going into the year. They have performed better even than I expected because those two young linebackers, Jalen Smith, looks healthy for the first time since Notre Dame, and Leighton Vander Esch is not playing like a rookie. Last year, if you lose Sean Lee, it's, oh, the season's over. This year, they haven't seemed to miss him. But with that said, when you're going, what do they do well? When you're looking at the Saints, oh, everything. What do they do poorly? Can't find it. Who can we attack? Don't know. Like, I feel like those would almost be the knee-jerk answers looking what the Saints have done.
And the problem with the Saints is they've got undrafted players that go into the game, and because Drew Brees is a force multiplier, it's not, oh, my God, we got to get him so much help.
Happened last week.
Yeah, those guys suddenly produce at a higher level. Those guys show up. And if you're trying to match them for scheme perspective, there's too much volume. Now, the one edge, the advantage I think Dallas has is they're not going to try to match them from a scheme perspective. They do have a fairly simple defense,
yes.
And they're able to play fast. So that will help in this situation because toe-to-toe, scheme-to-scheme, not many people match up well with the Saints.
What DeMarcus Lawrence has to be careful in the Dallas defenders is the Saints can play a lot of different ways. And when you have a top seven rush offense and you have a top six pass offense, that's the lethal combination of the offensive team. Brian Billick used to always tell us when he was the offensive coordinator, him and Tom Moore, picked it up from Tom Moore. If you want to be an elite offense, you got to be in the top 10 in both of those categories. Because if you are, you have the ability to be. They don't know what's coming at you. So give a given game, you can rush the ball 30, 35 times, or you could throw it. You don't care how to do it, and you can do both of them at a high level. And their ability, the Saints, with their special teams, Mike Westhoff, one of the best in the business, as their special teams coordinator, they come up with two or three special teams, so they gain advantage in special teams. And then now let's look at the little trick plays, because what I do believe, DeMarcus Lawrence comments, it won't get the players' attention, but Sean Payton, he is petty. And I do believe if he gets the chance to run a couple sucker plays where they don't block him, they will do that because they bring Taysom Hill in. They have some little wrinkles that I don't believe his comment will affect the players, but every once in a while as a coach, you just take a little note and you just mark it down and you try to design something special in the game just for that player.
So that's so interesting. I was going to ask whether the coaches factor in here at all, the scheming, the game plans, when you have Jason Garrett and Sean Payton going up against each other.
I mean, I think enormously. When you mentioned the undrafted guys, they had four touchdown passes to undrafted free agents last week on Thanksgiving. In those four players had a combined two career touchdown receptions going into the game. None of those were, it was like, oh my God, where'd this player come from? Not to say those guys aren't going to be quality players, but it was, oh, they're wide open. Like, it was they are scheming them wide open. Drew Brees is putting pinpoint passes on them, and those guys don't have anyone within 10 yards of them. Because it felt to me like the Falcons' game plan was Thomas and Kamara are not going to beat us. And Thomas and Kamara were neutralized.
They had
the worst game of the year.
Right.
But Saints still played them for 31.
Just a little thing when I see the Saints, because they score an awful lot and they make a lot of big plays. But last week, I thought on Thanksgiving, watch the celebration of their superstars when other guys make plays. It's very, very refreshing because they weren't having the big game. They've dominated the national stage, Drew Brees, Michael Thomas, Ingram. Like, they've had all the – but, man, there's other guys. And they were just as excited doing their celebration. So, for me, a lot of times, I look for little things in a championship team. Last year, Philadelphia, you could see them. They rally around Nick Foles. They rallied around their secondary. And you could start to see they started to get a mojo. So as we start getting late November, in December, let's just watch for some little things, Coach, that you and I know we think that they're very, very important when you're trying to play championship football.
And sometimes you have to coach those things on your teams. You got to coach people to be happy for other people's success. Mm-hmm. You got to coach them to look at the big picture. When you see Kamara's relationship with Ingram, there's a sincerity
yes.
to that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
They're pleased when the other guy goes in and has success, even though it means they're not getting a rep.
Right.
And to me, that's a hard emotion to artificially manufacture.
Des had been there for 2 days.
And they
threw up the X the whole game
yes.
afterwards. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. they seem to be a truly tight-knit group that could have gone a different direction. Remember how their season ended last year? A gaff by a rookie, a big yep. as the stomach punches you could get, thinking they're going to the NFC Championship game to play Nick Foles, who hadn't played well up to that point. They were thinking they were going to the Super Bowl. A mm-hmm. devastating loss like that sometimes rips guys apart. It seems to have brought this team closer to.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.